You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
They could break here, Chelsea. This could be the moment. Frank Lampard for Chelsea. It's Carvalho to his right. Lampard for the title. Lampard! It's 2-0! It's Chelsea's championship! And 50 years of waiting have come to an end!
It's Lampard. Comes out to Essien!
Oh my goodness.
It's a counter-attack. It's Didier Drogba. And now get down the middle. Drogba goes! Scores!
Stretch it. Stretch it. Mix it on Minidou. Stretch it.
Chelsea 2! Stretch it. And Didier Drogba has it!
Drogba in the centre!
McCoy just came from the back. He's got it!
Possibly bleak as this.
Drogba!
Never ended up in McDonald's. And I have had a trophy in one time.
Welcome to Chelsea Hour. My name is Mies. I'll be your host for this one. I've got two very special guests. I've got Jay. How you doing, bro?
All good, my bro. All good, brother. Can't complain. Can't complain.
Yeah, it's been a decent week. Funny week, but decent at the same time. Shemi, yeah. What are you saying, bro?
I'm good, bro. How are you?
Yeah, I can't complain. It's been, like I said, it's been a funny old week, man. You know, after, 15 games, Tuchel unbeaten. On the 15th game, yeah, step too far, unfortunately. And we came up against the mighty West Brom, bottom of the table. Second bottom of the table. And really, really been poor. But they came up trumps against us in a 5-2 win at Stamford Bridge, which was a crazy old game. Crazy game, because it seemed like every time they went forward, they caused us issues. Now, obviously, that wasn't the story of the game, 11v11. I don't think that we started off particularly well, but, you know, like I said, it's a funny old game. So, Jay, obviously, watched it back. What are your thoughts going into the game? Obviously, early kickoff, 12:30 after international break. A lot of players were tired. A lot of players were travelling and playing a couple of days earlier. So we didn't really have much time to train. But you think that was enough of an excuse? Or what was your overall feeling when you saw the lineup and what you were expecting?
When I saw the lineup, like, straight away, I was confident. I think I was just confident, obviously, due to the previous results that we'd had before international break. But then, like, just like things like Thiago Silva coming back, I just thought to myself, he was going to be very determined to, like, obviously right the wrong from what he did against West Brom the first time. And obviously, we all know now that backfired. But I just feel like it was just such a weird game. Like, I was so happy with the lineup. I was happy with... I wasn't so happy with, like, the start of it, like, the start of the game, but I was just happy with... Like, generally going into the game, I was happy with everything. So, yeah, it was a massive, massive slap in the face, obviously, when we eventually obviously lost that game. So, I'll be honest with you, that game, yeah, has come and gone so quickly for me. Like,
that's the thing, like, you know when some losses arise, yeah, and it's almost like you dust yourself down and go again, basically. And I think that's the and. A lot of that comes from the manager taking the energy and vim away from a defeat. And Tuchel kind of managed that really, really well. But I do want to get into the details of the game. Shemi, when you saw the lineup, and I think a couple of people, like, I think Babs, I'm going to give him his flowers, but Babs was talking about Christensen being, he has to start over Thiago Silva as much as possible, basically. When you saw the lineup, Shems, were you concerned about Thiago Silva, considering he hadn't played for about 4 or 5 weeks prior? What was your feeling? And do you think that was the right decision?
Yeah, first of all, I'm not giving Babs any flowers because that guy... But yeah, to be honest with you, I weren't concerned about Thiago coming back in, to be honest. Just given the way he's performed this season, I think he's been fantastic. He's an experienced pro, and I think... Tuchel had the same mindset in the sense that, yeah, Thiago's been there, done that, throwing him back in shouldn't really be a problem. And I was of that same view. So I weren't worried at all. But I think that 10-game break where he was injured did kind of take a toll on him, in the sense that he came back a little rusty, he was a little rash, he did seem like he wanted to prove a point. So yeah, I guess you could say it kind of backfired, but at the same time, I felt like Christensen needed a rest because he played virtually every single minute since Thiago got injured. So it was a damn if you do, damn if you don't situation. But when I saw the lineup, I was cool because I expect us to beat West Brom. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I think we had enough on the pitch to beat West Brom. I think the lineup was fine. I know he rotated. I have a point to get into a bit later, but I still feel like we had enough on the pitch to get in to beat West Brom. But no one turned up, and everyone as a collective was just really poor. And that's bound to happen, like, you know, throughout a season, especially when you've been on a run as we have, you're bound to have one game where you kind of, you know, you fall short of the level and you don't get, you don't reach the level you have been reaching in the last few months. And on top of that, West Brom was super clinical. So it was one of those games we couldn't do anything about. But yeah, man, that was my initial thoughts before the game.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, fans, not even just Chelsea fans, but fans in general, kind of get into this, oh, why did you rotate? You shouldn't have rotated. I think there was a comment from Joe Cole on BT Sport saying that, oh, you shouldn't have rotated. You're showing a bit of disrespect to West Brom. It's the Premier League. Welcome to the Premier League, etc. Well, ultimately, even with the changes, Chelsea should have enough quality and really did have enough quality to actually perform better. I just think that the overall performance, even including Thiago Silva, the overall performance of the team just wasn't necessarily great. Seemed a bit sloppy, quite sluggish, and just our passing in general in that game was just very, very sloppy. I think Jorginho was one of the biggest... one of the biggest culprits, in fact. I think two of his errant passes actually put Thiago Silva in those positions where he got the both yellow cards. So generally, our passing was really, really poor. I felt the link between the midfield and attack was really, really bad. And evidently, I felt like we were missing, say, a Mason Mount. I don't think Pulisic was great. Although he got the goal, credit to him, he got the goal. From Marcos Alonso, fantastic free kick, got tipped onto the post, and then Pulisic followed it in and tapped it in. And I felt like the goal wasn't necessarily deserved or undeserved. I just felt like, okay, it's 1-0. Right now it's quite comfortable, and we should really see it out. I think he scored around the 30th or 32nd minute or something like that. So I thought, okay, get the goal. And I guess it should really be a cruise on here. But then Jorginho, I think before the goal, in fact, Jorginho made a completely wayward pass. And I think he was wide open as well. Like, Jorginho had no one on him, no one pressing him. He just passed it straight to West Brom player. And they slip it in, and Thiago Silva gets caught out on the wrong side and brings it down. Gets a yellow card. And obviously, he took one for the team. Fine. But then there's a lot of discussion about the second yellow. Jorginho again gives it away. West Brom break on us. And get some decent defending, in fact. And then Thiago Silva, they try and shoot. The shot's been taken, and Thiago Silva, in a way of trying to block it, I think he makes a slight bit of contact, or the West Brom player actually kicks out at Thiago Silva. There's contact, and boom, second yellow. And just moments before that, Timo Werner had a similar situation where he's crossing in the box. He gets caught in the penalty area after the ball's gone. No appeals for penalty, no VAR check, no nothing. And then this, Thiago Silva literally makes a block. Same thing, ball's gone, makes slight contact, second yellow card. I just don't understand that. The inconsistency is really bothersome. And in another game, I don't know if it was the Southampton game, but I think it might have been the Burnley game, where a cross has gone in, the ball's gone, there's contact made, and a penalty's given. So this inconsistency in the refereeing in England is actually really, really poor. But again, even for me, when that Werner challenge came in, well, when that challenge on Werner happened on the live on the Discord, I said, no, that's not a foul. It's football. These things happen. But then you see a penalty that's given in the other game, and you see a second yellow card for Thiago Silva. For me, it's just a complete mess. And that completely threw us off and completely.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've spoken about Zuma. And Jay, I want you to kind of touch on him, because obviously before Tuchel came in, Zuma was a mainstay, and we felt that we couldn't really perform defensively without him. But since Tuchel's come in, he's found himself on the fringes, and you can kind of see why in the back three. Jay, I want to kind of get your thoughts on seeing Zuma in the back three. What are your thoughts on him generally, and where he finds himself, I guess, down in the pecking order?
This is tough for me, because I'm a big fan of Zuma. Like, generally, I really like Zuma as a defender. I like all the attributes he has. Massive fan of how dominant he is in the air. I like the way, like, he kind of lets defenders know that he's there more often than not. So he kind of rattles them, like, early in the game. A lot of players like to go 1v1 with Zuma. Do you know what I mean? And I think, especially when they see him come in for a tackle, they're definitely the ones that are backing out. But the one weakness that I feel like I see Zuma have consistently is ball watching. Jesus Christ, this brother. He will, like, I don't know what it is, yeah? Like, he must know it's a weakness. It has to have been highlighted, because the Minamino goal against Southampton, he was ball watching. Yeah, there's nobody else around but Minamino, bro. Watch the man. There's nobody else to look at. Just watch the man. Then the Pereira one, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt a little bit with the Pereira one, because basically everybody's walking up. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everyone's
coming up. So, yeah, I can still hear
me. It's one of them ones where it's like, I feel like everybody's switched off there a little bit. But it's also very clever from Pereira, because it was like, you saw Neymar and Marquinhos' goal.
The same goal, similar.
Yeah, that's strictly between Neymar and Marquinhos, and just the cleverness of the players. Like, they took an opportunity, and like with a little bit of quality, they managed to get the goal. And I feel like the same thing happened with West Brom with that Pereira goal. So like Pereira's caught everybody napping. He's running on goal. There were questions about whether Mendy should have maybe come out or not. Like, I don't know. Like.
Yeah,
it's difficult, but I still feel like he was ball watching though a little bit.
I feel Zuma was really poor there, because I feel like Pereira is coming onto his side, basically.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So I feel like in that regard, he's coming into it. So Zuma should really have him in his line of sight. And also, Zuma, you're looking at a keeper that's about to boot it, so you should be looking at what's around you. And I feel like he just slept. Christensen came on after Thiago Silva, basically. Yeah. So I feel like Christensen tried to get back, but Christensen, I think Pereira got a march on Christensen, and then Zuma was the closest behind, he was furthest back. And I don't, whilst I want to have sympathy for Zuma and the rest of the team in general, the goalkeeper booted it. It wasn't like it was a long ball from a defender, it was a boot from the goalkeeper. So I just didn't, I can't, nothing will tell me otherwise than that being poor. I think that that's just generally quite poor. Yeah. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, but that's, I feel like that happening, a goalkeeper getting an assist, I think that's a defensive error, basically.
Yeah.
Shape-wise, I think there's a defensive error. And even Mendy, I don't think he could have done much, really and truly. I think Mendy was literally our last saviour in that moment. I don't think he really could have done much. It was a great finish from Pereira. And yeah, that brought it down to 1-1. And then Reece James. Now, Reece James, I felt like he was really poor against West Brom. But the most criminal thing he did that game was did a lofted flick pass back to Jorginho.
Jorginho
then misdirected his header. Again, I can't necessarily blame Jorginho for that goal. Although he should really do better with the header, he should never be put in that position to make a header. So that was just poor from Reece James. And he put us in danger. We're down to 10 men. We're in the, 45th minute, an extra time. Just see the game out. Be a bit more shrewd. He didn't need to do it. He had Aspi to his left as well. There was no need to do it. He flicks it back. Jorginho, a poor defender from Marcos Alonso, as we expect. And it's 2-1. The game's been turned on its head. And now we're having to chase the game. And when you try and chase the game, ultimately, you're always going to get punished.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like if we got into that, if we went into that half at 1-1, at halftime at 1-1, I felt we probably could have gone on to win the game, because I feel that in doing so, West Brom would feel like they're going to come on to us. They'd come on to us more because it's 10 men. They're going to try, they need the points. They'll try and get the result. But then we could be compact, sit back, and break on them. But the opposite was true. We were 2-1 down and we were trying to push. Then they just kept breaking on us. So it was just, it was just too sloppy. We made a lot of defensive errors. And in the second half, we just got taken apart by absolutely stunning goals. And I want to be critical of the team, but I think the goals were just incredible. Like Shems, it's weird, but out of all the goals we conceded, what was the best one for you? It's mad. I'm asking you this question, but, bruv, they're mad.
That third goal was a madness for me. That the roof of the net, the first time on the half volley. Nah, that was peak. That goal was it. After that goal went in, I said, yeah, that's it. Like, there's no point. Because you know when things like that are happening, you just know that this is a day, it's not for you. Let's just wrap it up and move on to the next game, because from when things are happening, goals like that are going in, like in West Brom's favour, like a whole West Brom, you just know it's not going to be a day. Yeah, but yeah, that goal was absolutely peak.
We ain't scored a goal of that quality all season, bro.
I'm telling you.
That was an absolute madness. So, like you said, Shirley, like when a goal like that goes in, it's curtains for me. That's done. Game done. Because
to be fair,
every time they got forward, it was just a mess. Every time they were just on our necks, bro. Like, every time.
To be fair, though, I knew, I don't know about you guys, but game was done by at 2-1, because when that second goal went in, and I saw our shape, I've never seen us so rattled as we were after that red card. The shape was absolutely all over the place. And like, it didn't seem like we really knew how to kind of just how to set up and see ourselves through to half time. I can see we were really rattled, and I can see that the way we were set up in terms of our shape, that it's going to be very, very difficult for us to score a goal, because I think he went to Pulisic and Werner, playing off Werner, and then it was like I saw Reece in the middle at times, and it just didn't look right, man. And I could tell that we weren't going to fashion a goal. So as soon as we went 2-1, I had an inkling that we weren't going to get a victory. Then when that third goal went in, it was curtains.
You know what? I think there was a lot of people actually talking about the Tuchel substitutions, saying that taking off Ziyech was really the wrong move, and we should have really kept the attack and move away from the three at the back, and just play with it. And Do you think there's some credit to that, or do you think that he made the right decision in bringing off Ziyech? I know Ziyech didn't have the greatest of games. I think he had a lot of opportunities to slide in Timo Werner and Pulisic, but he was getting the passes wrong. But do you think that was the right sub, Jake? I don't know, man. I'm trying hard to criticise Tuchel for the substitutions, but at the same time, I hear what the fans are saying, well, some fans are saying.
Because he went defensive, didn't he, a little bit? That was the criticism as well, right? But my thing is, like, I can't remember what the score was when he took Ziyech off.
1-0.
Was it 1-0, yeah?
1-0.
Oh, yeah. Because he obviously, he took Ziyech off for Christensen, right? But for my thing is, we've been doing this all Tuchel's, like, tenure so far. Like, we've been defending well, compact, not allowing teams to score. So, like, I don't understand why that's shocking. Like, he wanted somebody else to come in to the middle of the park. You could argue that maybe he could have let Zuma go into the middle and then maybe brought on someone else that was maybe a little bit more attacking. Maybe, like, I know he's played Emerson there a couple times at left centre-back. Yeah. Maybe he could have done something like that. But, I just feel like, I don't know, man. He doesn't trust the attack enough. Do you understand? Like, Tuchel's problem right now, and people need to understand, he hasn't got that many people to rely on up top. He's got, how many attackers can he rely on at the moment? Mm-hmm. How many can you say, this guy's going to drag us back into the game?
Only Mason Mount, funny enough.
Only Mason Mount. Literally, there's only Mason Mount that you can say has got a possibility of dragging us back into a game. And even Mount himself, to be fair to him, under Tuchel, he's been banging goals. But even Mount himself can go through a game that play well.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
And not score, do you know what I mean? Or not assist. So even then, it's like...
Mount is not a reliable or regular goal scorer or regular source of goals. Although that might be changing under Tuchel.
Yeah, it looks like, yeah.
A regular source of goals, in my opinion.
Yeah, but generally, if we're talking generally, you're right. Like that, and that's what I'm trying... Because I don't want to put pressure on the kid, like, say... He's the guy that we look to go and bang 2-3 goals to get us back into a game. It's not that. Like, we ain't got nobody like that at the moment. The guy that's meant to be doing that, we'll talk about later, but we ain't got nobody that's doing that. So when you see, it's the same reason Tuchel has gone in this direction as soon as he's come in. He's working with what he's...
Credit Karma has always been there to help you make better financial decisions. And now they want to help you even more. With the Credit Karma Money Spend account, you can be rewarded for good money habits. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot and your Instant Karma cash will be added back to your spend account. Open your FDIC-insured spend account for free. There's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. And when you make a purchase between June 8th and June 30th, you'll automatically be entered to win $1 million. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant Karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank Incorporated. Member FDIC. Maximum balance and transfer limits apply.
But that he can rely on in the squad. And right now he can rely on... We had Clean Sheet FC when Lampard was here. So it makes sense to work with the defence and make the defence better. Do you understand? And we did that. And he carried on doing that against West Brom when we went a man down. My thing was, initially he probably had an attacking plan. But again, because he can't rely on some of these guys... What's he meant to do? I don't understand what people want him to do. Sometimes our midfielders can't even hit the ball into space. It's embarrassing. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know. Like, for me, Ziyech obviously hasn't really been pulling up trees under Tuchel. Pulisic hasn't really looked great either, although he has contributed in the last two games. He got an assist and then he got a goal, obviously, against West Brom. But like you said, I don't know if the attack is consistent enough to be pulling out and getting us these results, especially Timo Werner. And he was pretty much a non-entity in the game. Didn't really exist at all. Didn't really pose much of a threat. Again, some sympathy for him. He was running behind and the pass wasn't really good. And the final pass wasn't good. The final execution wasn't good. But, yeah, I don't think he's offering enough of a goal threat. So I could understand why Tuchel wanted to maintain the three at the back. I think even in the first half, I remember, Reece James actually went into midfield. He tucked into midfield for about 5-10 minutes and it just wasn't looking good. We were getting killed out wide. So then he went back to the back five, but still, we just kept getting killed all over the pitch. But yeah, it was a poor result. It was a poor result and I talked it down to a poor day at the office. There wasn't really much positives to really discuss other than Mason Mount getting another goal. Timo Werner getting an assist. You know, it looked for me when I watched it live that Timo kind of passed up the opportunity to score. He looks really short of confidence. And I don't know, man. It don't look good, man. It don't look good. And I don't want to completely write him off, but it doesn't look good, man. A player of... Yeah, to have that kind of crisis in confidence is really, really bothersome.
It's
had crises like that before.
It's hard not to, isn't it? Like, we'll speak about the other game that we had this week, but it's hard not to when you see like some of the basics that he's doing get wrong. And I've slaughtered other players in this same team for those same things. So it's hard. Like, my thing was at the beginning, obviously, you've just come into a new team. It is what it is. Like, you're adapting, whatever. But I do feel like even in the first season, there's got to be like some sort of quality that you see like from the player to be like, you see Havertz, we see Havertz and we're like, you know what, we can see quality there. So we're not shook. We know like something's coming from Havertz eventually, but like, and even Ziyech to a degree as well. Sometimes with Ziyech, you see moments of quality, like with the ball at his feet, whether it be a pass or whatever. But then with Werner, I think right now, the only thing that's keeping his head above water right now is literally the fact that I think he's probably one of the most productive out of all of the players. Yeah. I don't know how, but he is. Like, he's got a bag of assists and he's got, like, I don't know, a handful of goals or whatever. But, like, his work rate also for the team, we can't knock him on that. He's mad selfless for the team. But
I agree. I feel like... And this is why it's a bit of a mess, man. Because I feel like whilst he doesn't bring that much of... he is a goal threat. He gets chances every game. It just concerns me now that he's starting to shy away from these chances. And I feel like we've dealt with kind of strikers like these before. Like Morata, like Torres. We've dealt with these guys before. And when they're suffering in crisis, they stop trying to do things. And Timo, I'm looking at it, and like the fact that you're passing up chances to score goals, and that was an easy chance. That is damning to me. That's damning to me. And obviously, it fell to Mount score, but it's damning to me. It's not a good sign.
He was shook in it.
He was very, very shook.
It's obviously we could chalk it down to the season. I think even to be fair to Timo. Earlier in the season, I felt he was playing with confidence.
I was going to say that. Technically,
didn't look a mess for me. I thought technically he looked quite sharp.
Agreed.
His touch looked good. His dribbling looked good. I remember when he was carrying balls and dribbling past people in against Brighton. Mm-hmm. The first game of the season, he looked good.
Southampton as well.
Even the Spurs goal.
Southampton, Spurs, Liverpool.
Yes, Spurs away in the FA, not in the Carabao Cup.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, like, he looked dangerous and looked like he would be a proper striker, but then I think what I said before, like playing him out wide, like as a left wing, really disoriented.
It destroyed him.
Disorientated him. He wasn't comfortable there. It didn't look good there. And I think that's where the confidence issues started to happen. And I think I remember saying it on a podcast that this playing him out wide might actually cause an issue. Not only is it causing an issue for players that can play there but aren't playing there, but for him especially, I don't think he likes playing wide. I think he likes playing that inside forward position or a Roman striker role. Him being stationed out left wing to actually do a winger's job was always going to cause an issue for him. So it's just, it's a bit of a shame. It's a mess. But what can we say, man? You just have to just wait and hope and see if he can do things. You don't know. With it being his first season, I can give allowances because to an extent he's been productive, but
yeah.
This is not what I expected. It's not what we expected. It's not what we hoped for. We wanted more. But we can only wait and see if he gives us more in the next couple of seasons.
I think he's benefiting from the fact that he has a manager that trusts him and fully backs him too. Like, I think Tuchel's really, really behind him. But for me, it's getting to that point whereby Tuchel's been in, 2 months now, I think? Yeah, 2 months. Came in January, February, March. 3 months. Tuchel's been in three months now.
Been 2 months.
Okay, 2 months, yeah. Cool. And I think Tuchel's kind of... I think that period whereby he instills... where he's trying to work on the confidence of Werner, I think for me, yeah, because we're getting to crunch time of the season, got some big games coming up, all that. I think that period of trying to, like, play him just to boost his confidence, I think that's kind of gone for me. Because the type of the season we're getting to now, obviously, we've got a big quarterfinal coming up. We've got... if we win that, we're in the semis, and then obviously we've got the run-in for the top four. I personally feel like because we're so stacked in that position behind the strikers, yeah, so those two 10 pockets, I feel like if we're playing someone that's not productive, okay, maybe he might be productive number-wise, but if there are other options like a Callum Hudson-Odoi or like a Pulisic who we know will comfortably do the job better, I think it's kind of time to kind of just let them go from the start and drop him, essentially, is what I'm trying to say. I don't feel like we're in a position right now from here on out, especially if we make that semi-final, from then onwards, the magnitude of the games we have coming up, we don't have room for passengers, in my opinion. So I honestly, for me, I said it in the group chat when the lineup came out yesterday for the Porto game. I would like to see Hudson-Odoi in that left channel. When he's played there, he's looked pretty good. I liked him against Everton there. Pulisic yesterday had a bright cameo. If Pulisic can stay fit, I'd much rather see him there too. You know what I'm trying to say? Yeah. So I just don't feel like we're in a position to be carrying people right now, man. The games are coming thick and fast, and the magnitude of the games are just too big. So whilst I do sympathize with him, like whilst I want him to get confidence and I want him to go, I just feel like if it's not happening, then just drop him out, man.
Well, what were your thoughts? What were your thoughts? Tuchel's response to that loss, because for me, I appreciated him as a manager and as a coach and just as a man, really, for taking accountability and putting the blame on himself, and also to call for calm, like the calls for calm, because I don't think he was necessarily carping on too much about being unbeaten and stuff, because I think he talked in a press conference prior that, look, we have to be humble, you know, we can't get ahead of ourselves too much. We need to be humble because ultimately their loss will eventually come. But he also spoke with so much confidence. So his response to the defeat, how did you guys feel? And did you ever feel concern with, you know, okay, our loss has happened now, so the wheels are going to fall off? Because I feel like the media wanted to kind of paint that feeling. Yeah. But how did you feel, Jay?
Nah, they've been waiting in it, but it's not the case, because I think Tuchel couldn't say this in the press conference, but I think he wanted to say them brothers could try shoot like that 500 times more and they won't score them goals. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as that, bro. Like, we're talking about, like, I've seen Kaká score goals like that. Like that volley that my man scored, Robinson,
yeah.
And on the dink. Never in your life, bro. Not again. Do that next game, innit? He won't do it.
Exactly. Like,
if these men were scoring like that every season, every game, every week in, week out, playing like they were
even be bottom two.
Even under Bilic, bro, they were kicking ball and they were not scoring goals like that. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
It was just one of them ones, like Shemi said, you see that third goal going and you're like, if these men hit anything else, it's going in. And that's what happened, bro. They scored another two. Yep. Ended up being 5-2. Is what it is, bro. It's one of Liverpool players would have been saying the same thing about the 7-2. Do you get what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, and Barkley was hitting it. It was deflecting off man and going in. It just is what it is, bro. Like, at the end of the day.
It's just one of those days, man. And I wanted to touch on the Inter fighting, but it seemed like that was, again, handled with aplomb by Thomas Tuchel. He put out the fire real quick, where there was fighting between Rudiger and Kepa and Azpilicueta and Reece James. But I just think that was just generally players showing them their passion and fight, and that they care. And obviously that loss disappointed them, and rightfully so. The loss should have disappointed them because we're on such a good run, and that could have implications for the top four. But, you know, that kind of leads on to, you know, a lot of the media were predicting that the Wolves will fall off, and some Chelsea fans said, well, look, after that big loss, and it was a heavy loss, how did Chelsea respond? And we had a massive midweek game against Porto in the Champions League, and a response was absolutely necessary. Tuchel spoke about it in a press conference that he's confident about the response because the players showed passion, they showed commitment in training, and what a response it was. Now, I guess that Porto game, boy, Sherry, there's a lot to take in because I felt, when watching that, I felt the first 10 minutes... 10, 15 minutes, we look cool, we look good, in control. And then suddenly, I think we made a couple errant passes and then Porto were onto us. It was mad. Non-stop pressing, non-stop popping. It was insane. Shebs, talk to us about that first half, bro.
Yeah, man. I think, I don't know if I agree that we were in control. I don't know. I think we kept possession okay, maybe in the first 10, but I think overall our passing was really lax. It was kind of similar to West Brom in the sense that a lot of passes were going astray. There was no link up in the attack. People who were available weren't receiving the ball. So the wing backs, Reece James especially, had all the space in the world, wasn't receiving the ball too many times. I think Christensen tried to play him a couple of times, but overhit it twice. I thought from that perspective, we weren't, especially the first 25 minutes of that first half, I think was quite poor. It was a little bit of a continuation from West Brom.
Breaking it down, first 10. So I said first 10, 15.
Oh, 10, 15. Okay, cool. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Post then.
Yeah, cool. I can agree with that.
The first 10, 15 minutes, I wouldn't say that we were creating chances. I felt we were just comfortable and we were dominating the ball. And so we're in a sinew of control. So
I agree.
We were popping them off the pitch, no, but we were keeping the ball well, passing it okay. And they weren't putting us under so much pressure. So we were passing it quite well and we're navigating into their half okay. The final pass wasn't there, but we'll navigate in the match okay and the occasion okay. But after 10, it might have been 10 minutes, but after 10 minutes, it was just chaotic to say the least.
Yeah, agreed, yeah. And then I think that the goal from Mount, which was quality, by the way, that settled us down. And I think that goal was kind of the first time we actually started to actually build patiently, build properly, you know.
You're jumping ahead. You're jumping ahead because...
Oh, my, okay, cool, sorry.
Prior to that, we were under immense pressure. Jay, we were under the cosh. Because, bruh, they had a chance at that half volley that dipped over just over Mendy's bar. The corner kick that Mendy had to flap away and then they had to blast and then they just knocked it over. Jay, bro, talk to us about the PMP that they had in that team.
Yeah, bruh. I do think, Porto kind of clocked on to our, overplaying. And that was one thing I was heavily critical about us when we lost them. And I just feel like Porto, they got a bit more PMP, they got a bit more energy, they got pace, everywhere on the pitch, there was just running man down. And I feel like whilst I think Kovacic and Jorginho, in some cases they dealt with it quite well, but then in some cases it was like if it was like a millisecond quicker, they nick the ball and they break on us or, you know, they're probably through. So it was, the thing is, I don't want to say we were completely out of control because I feel like a lot of people these days, they feel like being in control is just when you've got the ball. Mm. And Chelsea have kind of mastered recently how to be in control also without it. So we've been defending decent in ways and we've been creating teams could create chances against us, but they're not chances where you're like, shit, we're lucky to still be in this game. I don't think, even the commentators were like, Porto, they're playing well, but they're not creating that chance, just that chance that can almost guarantee them a goal. And you, like you said, the volley, that's a very hard volley to score. Do you know what I mean? If they score that, nothing you can really do.
Plucky moments. They had plucky moments.
It was moments that made you think, yo, like if they get any closer, then it's a goal, innit? And that's probably what the problem was. But for me, I just felt like what was more frustrating was just the way we were trying to counter them, bro. Like it was, like Shemi said, like Christensen was knocking the ball out of play here and there, like trying to find James. Kovacic's radar was absolutely horrific. Oh my God, like the long balls that these men were playing were just literally going straight through to the keeper, some of them. And I was just like, what's going on here? Like these men have got playing a high line. Werner wasn't making the runs in behind. Like sometimes he's normally decent with that, at least. Do you know what I'm saying? Done it very well against Liverpool. Didn't see it against Porto. I just thought to myself, what are we doing here? I couldn't tell you what the plan was. Like we were literally clueless.
You know what? On the Discord, me and Babs were there. We were talking, look, the biggest issue that I felt that we had in that first half is that we weren't necessarily showing Porto that much respect when we were trying to pass it out from the back. And when they started pressing us hard, we just kept going long. And I understand that, look, if in danger, I'll just try to clear it. But the biggest issue is with the quality of that. When you do that, the ball just kept coming back. And Porto just on us. And the thing with Porto, when you try and press them, they're very good at popping it past you when you're trying to press. And our press is quite organised, but they'll still find ways to play intricate football, which was very, very good. Now, whilst it didn't create clear-cut chances, because our defence, for me, personally, defensively, exceptional performances. But I felt like we lost control in the midfield in that first half. And Jorginho and Kovacic, they just weren't getting their foot on the ball. And because we're trying to, well, and even to be fair to both of them, I was quite heavily critical on Jorginho in the first half. But even to be fair to him, a lot of the game was bypassing him. Like the game was just going from our defence to trying to get the fullbacks in or wingbacks in, trying to get Timo in, but the passes were just well astray and they were just lumping it back to Porto. Whilst the game passed them by, they also didn't offer us much control even when we're trying to go short. So that first half was a bit of a mess for me. And I understood the tactic that, okay, let's go long direct like we did against Liverpool and get in behind them. But the issue was Porto weren't playing that deep. They played quite high, but it wasn't high enough to get enough space to run in behind. I felt like the space was out wide rather than through the middle. And we kept doing that long ball through the middle. I think
they're unlike, say, for example, in Liverpool as well, I feel like they're wide men as well. They were attacking, but they were also quick, but they were also like, they were defensively aware as well. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's not like you were just playing against guys that just had no clue. Like they were good defensively. So that's what
Their team shape was really good.
Yeah.
And I could see why. I could see why. Juventus struggled against them because Juve have a Juve their style of play under Pirlo isn't great. It isn't really a methodical, tactical and pattern of play. They're quite direct in their approach now, and it's not pretty basically. So I can see why a plucky, very astute defensively and very organized team like Porto caused them so much issues and it caused them so much problems. Because when you see us, I think that we're quite tactically adept and on the ball, and we kind of have our patterns of play. But that they even cause us issues. But that Mason Mount goal, let's talk about that goal, because, bro, honestly, look, Mason Mount has had a lot of detractors, yeah? And I feel like a lot of detractors have come because Frank Lampard played him week in, week out, whether he's poor, whether he's good, regardless, he played him week in, week out, at the expense of others, but...
Like any good team, hiring the right employees for your front office is just as important as recruiting the best players for the game. That's why you need Indeed. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, screen, and interview all on Indeed. Get your quality shortlist of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster. Only pay for the candidates that meet must-have qualifications and schedule and complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers four times more hires than all other job sites combined. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
Thing is, when I said Mason Mount, yeah, his game will elevate under Tuchel, I felt it in my soul. Not because, you know, I think Mason Mount is potentially world class or whatever. I just feel like Mason Mount is a player that will soak up so much information about from a proper coach. And I feel Tuchel is one of the brightest coaches in football to kind of get the best out of certain players. And I think Mason Mount is one of those guys. I mean, Mason, under Tuchel, has been exceptional. Exceptional. I think, don't get me wrong, even under Lampard, he was good to a degree. Good. I don't think he was amazing. I think he was great. But I think he was good. But under Tuchel, I think he has been exceptional. I think he... Like I said, the link between our midfield and attack against West Brom, for example, was non-existent. And that, why was that? Mason Mount wasn't playing. When Mason Mount came on, even under 10 men, that's when we started finding the connection. That's when we started getting our attacks up, our wing-backs started coming up. Mason Mount was the key in that. And again, against Porto, the only one in our attack for me that looked decent. Kai Havertz wasn't really good because he wasn't in the game. We kept lumping up to him. He had to keep knocking it down. And Timo Werner was just completely absent. Mason Mount was the only one that really stood up. Technically, tactically, perfect performance, in my opinion, from Mason Mount. Tactically especially. Get defensively covered well, helped out the midfield, linked between the two, connected very well with Reece James out wide. Hey, I think Mason Mount, man. Let's talk about the goal, because we've talked about Mason and that half turn. He's able to receive the ball on a half turn. It might be a Le Cobham kind of thing, because obviously we know Ruben can do it. We know that Hudson does it really, really well. But Mason Mount, bruv, he does that turn, that half turn, so well, bro. So all the time, every game, every single game, bro. Shems, talk to us about the goal, man.
Yeah. I was going to touch on the half-turn as well, because like, literally every game, no matter how tight the space is, he always manages to pull it off, and it's fantastic to see. It's a great skill to have in his locker. But yeah, as I was saying, I think that goal was the first time we really started to build and actually started to put some passes together. And yeah, as soon as Jorginho put it into him, I kind of knew that when he made that turn, I was like, okay, cool. I think we're in business here. I could see, because Mason, he's very... In front of goal, he's very assured. I feel quite comfortable with him when he's in front of goal and in and around the box and he's about to shoot. I feel like a lot of the time he is quite good with getting his shots on goal and working the goalkeeper. But yeah, as soon as he turned, it was a great finish across the goalkeeper. I think the goalkeeper possibly could have saved it, could have done a little bit better. But no, credit to Mason Mount, because that was a really, really fantastic goal and it just settled us down. And yeah, credit to him, man. Great finish.
Yeah, so it was his first goal in the Champions League. It was a long time coming, but what a goal that was, man. And when we needed it, because it was looking a bit shaky for us, I can't lie. I wasn't feeling very comfortable.
Yeah.
But as Shem said, that goal went in and it definitely settled us down, man. But Jay, how important do you think Mason Mount is to Chelsea right now?
I think he is quite important. I remember like a while back, we were talking about like who should probably start in the team the majority of the time in the attack and all that. And I think it might even have been me and Shemi, and we was like, oh, like Mount is probably one that majority of the time he probably has to start in that attack. Mm-hmm. I think like just for a load of reasons. Obviously he's got like lots of quality. But even just the trust, that whole thing of trust. And I know like Lampard trusted him, but also kind of neglected his poor performances like we talked about before. I think with Tuchel, he's acknowledged obviously all his attributes. He's acknowledged the fact that he's a hard worker, he's a Chelsea boy. But I also think as well, he's actually locked onto the fact that this kid can be so much better as well. And I think he's working on that with Mount. And One thing I feel like Mount's doing now, you might not be able to realise it because it just seems like he's always running. I think if you watch his games now, especially in the final third, he's utilising his energy a little bit more. And he's not like, I don't know, I feel like he's not snatching at things as much under Tuchel. I feel like
he's not as rushed. I feel he's a lot more precise in his play in the final.
Yeah, that's what I feel like. I feel like he's...
That was one of our biggest criticisms now, to be honest.
Exactly. And I feel like in that moment, I agree with Shemi as well. I feel like when he's got a little bit of time to just focus on getting the shot off, I think more often than not, he works the keeper. And that was a great finish. Like, it was a very hard finish as well. Like, and it was.
I think the point that Meads made earlier about him being the link man is very, very key. Because that for me just shows why he's so important. Because I don't feel like any of the others. I don't feel like Ziyech is particularly a link man, even though he's a playmaker. But his playmaking and creativity more so comes through like passing and picking up crosses. I don't think Pulisic is really a link man. I think Callum, to an extent, can be, because when he drops deep and receives the ball and drives, sometimes he acts as that link man. But I think Mason does it the most consistently out of all of them who play in that pocket. So I think that point alone, I think that really, really emphasises how important he is, because without him, we don't have that. And I think if he can just brush up, because I think that was really the only criticism that some of us man had about him this season, is that in front of goal, his decision-making has been a bit iffy, you know, overhitting passes sometimes, or just not releasing the ball. But I feel like if he can kind of just brush up on that, and if he can keep adding numbers to his game, which he's done this season, I think this is his most productive season. Well, in the Chelsea, obviously, I know it's only like 2 seasons, but if he keeps adding numbers to his game, then yeah, man, he's most definitely going to be our most important attacker. But yeah, that link man point is key, because no one else really does it as well as he does, and as consistently as he does.
Yeah, and I feel like with Mason Mount, I definitely think that he's grown a lot under Tuchel. And you know, when Tuchel first came in, I think everyone was saying, "Oh, yeah, Mason Mount is Lampard's son," blah blah blah. But ultimately, one of the best things about Mason Mount is that
he scored 5 under Tuchel, didn't it? He scored 5 goals, 5 and 15.
So yeah, he's done really, really well.
Yeah, that's decent.
I think he scored three under Lampard in this season. So yeah, his numbers have definitely jumped. I think 3 and 27 under Lampard. So
some big games as well, man.
Big games, big performances. Like Liverpool, he scored. You know, obviously scored against West Brom, that tap in, but then scored in our most important game of the season, man. And obviously things look good. Obviously Chilwell capped off the performance with a fantastic solo goal, capitalised on a mistake where we tried to hit that ball every single time, and we finally, well, Kovacic kind of got it right, where he intercepted, but it wasn't intercepted, and then Chilwell got the ball, rounded the keeper, and capped off a very good night. Because I think the second half, in comparison to the first, I think the second half was a lot better. Controlled it so well. I think their threats, like their runs in behind, their runs into the channels, Rudiger dealt with Mariga very, very well. I think we just dealt with their threats a lot better. I think Kovacic and Jorginho in the second half were excellent, especially Jorginho. And Reece James, incredible in the second half, absolutely incredible, dominated that side. I think it was quite even in the first half for him and Zanussi.
Yeah, they were going at it.
it was very, very even. But then second half, Reece James just got the better of him, bossed him. And so the brilliant performance from Reece James. I think Azpilicueta, again, very good defensively, but on the board, just really, really poor. But it's a great result. 2-0 away from home. Obviously, we've got Crystal Palace this weekend at 5 o'clock on a Saturday. And then we've got back the second leg, Porto, obviously, to play them for the second leg. And hopefully, that's us into the semi-finals, man. And then we play either Real Madrid or Liverpool. Now, obviously, the last time we won the Champions League, I'm not really one for superstitions, but the last time we won the Champions League, we played a Portuguese team in the quarterfinals. We won the away leg 1-0. We won a away leg 10-0. This time round, it might happen. I'm not gonna say it. Look, and then we played after we got through the Portuguese side. play the Spanish side. Now, Real Madrid are currently winning 3-1 against Liverpool. I'm not saying that that tie is done, but if they do, we'll be playing the Spanish side in the semi-finals. If we play the set, I'm not going to say we're going to do it. I'm not going to say it's going to happen. But the potential's there, bro. And I'm not saying that it's definite, but stars are aligning.
One problem, yeah, with bucking Madrid.
Just wait. Let me just continue to peel off things, right? The last manager to win 3 consecutive knockout games in his first games for Chelsea, Roberto Di Matteo. All I'm saying is the stars are aligning. It's
crazy, dog.
The stars are aligning. I think Olivier Giroud has got 5 Champions League goals. Drogba had 6 Champions League goals. I'm just saying, things are aligning. I'm not saying we're going to do it, but if we do it, don't be surprised. If you switch 2012 and you get 2021, that's all I'm going to say. But yeah, things are looking very, very promising. Obviously, before we even attack the second leg, Crystal Palace. Just thoughts on that. What will your team be for Crystal Palace? Because we've got a big game against Porto in the second leg. So how do you line up against Palace? Would you go relatively full strength, or would you do some more alternate? To be honest, I don't know if there's a real full strength for Tuchel, because he alternates and adjusts so much. I don't think there's necessarily a full strength team. But would you make any real changes to the side? You know, maybe get Kante in, get some game time in his legs.
I'd get Kante in, and I'd also get Hassan Doye in at wing back. I think because two reasons. I think obviously James has played quite a bit of football, and obviously rotation is important for the Porto game. And also I've watched quite a bit of Palace this season. I don't know why, because they're not enjoyable to watch, but they're one of the most low block teams we can kind of, in the league, like in the sense that they will make it very, very difficult for us. That's just how they play under Hodgson. And I think that the extra kind of wide threat would be necessary for that one. The extra bit of dynamism, I think, would be necessary for that one. I think if you cast your minds back to the Stamford Bridge game, they made it quite difficult for us. And we struggled until we got that break, and that little lucky break for Ben Chilwell. And then that's when the floodgates started to kind of open. So I get Hodgson in that wing back. I get Kante in midfield. I'd probably get Pulisic in just off that bright cameo he did. I wouldn't mind seeing Giroud. It's been a while since we've seen Giroud, I can't lie. I think I wouldn't mind seeing Giroud as well. I am a bit worried Giroud came out yesterday. I think from the start, it's been a while since we've seen him from the start. But I'm a bit worried though, because every time we have rotated, so Southampton, Leeds, it hasn't looked good. So I'm hoping Saturday is different. I don't know if you guys have any different takes, but yeah.
I definitely hear you on N'Golo Kante, Hudson-Odoi as well. I might be tempted to give Werner a rest and play maybe Ziyech or Pulisic.
Yeah, when I said Pulisic,
I want to see Tammy Abraham as well. I do want to see Tammy Abraham. I think Tammy Abraham's fallen out of favour under Tuchel, I think. I think he's been injured, but also when he has been available, Tuchel's not really left to put him in the team. So obviously there have been links today with Tammy Abraham moving to West Ham, which will be a great move for him. But yeah, I don't know. I think I would like to see Tammy Abraham, because I think Tammy is probably our most reliable goal scorer out of the lot. But beyond that, I wouldn't really change too much. We just get the win, because top four, as much as, you know, Champions League is, you know, we could potentially win it or whatever. And, you know, when you're so late in these competitions, anyone can win it really and truly. But that top four, you kind of want to solidify that space. And obviously Leicester play West Ham this weekend. So you're hoping that Chelsea can kind of capitalise on either one of them dropping points. So
I feel like it's massive, bro. I feel like if Leicester drop points and we manage to get the win, we're 2 points behind them. But if it's like a draw, we go back into the top four and we still catch up on Leicester. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's massive. Like, West Brom was already a bad loss, like, in terms of even catching up with teams. Do you know what I mean? Like, we should be talking about going
up. Yeah, that could have pulled us away.
Yeah, we should be talking about
that. Could have pulled up for me. That could have
pulled up for me. So yeah, man, I don't know.
Yeah, it's frustrating. That was a missed opportunity for us. That was a missed opportunity for us, especially with Tottenham. Tottenham drop points, and then it was a big opportunity missed. Mm-hmm. Obviously, West Ham are now into the top four. Liverpool won as well. So it's just like, we need to. Hopefully, I need us to get a win against Crystal Palace. Anything but a win is really disastrous for us, man.
Especially with West Ham coming up soon as well. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, it's a madness. But yeah, man, I think we can leave it there. Thank you, boys, for giving me your Thursday evening. But man, appreciate that. Hopefully, by the time we reconvene next week, will we get 3 points at Crystal Palace? We'll be into the semi-final of the Champions League, bro. And that ain't happened since 2014. So, fingers crossed, man. That's a very, very big, big, big scalp if we manage it, man. So, if we get through and then obviously we play Real Madrid or Liverpool, you never know. It could be another final. And anything can happen in the final, man. So, fingers crossed, man.
Boy, I just don't want to back up on Hazard, innit? That's all I'm saying.
Boy, that's what I'm saying.
I'm not trying to see that you...
You know that picture of the guy holding the gun and he's got tears.
Yeah, Wesley Snipes is crying, bruv. Him coming back to kill us at the bridge, bro. Look, all I'm saying is, I hope we do it, man. I don't want us to cock up this situation where we're 2-0 up away from home. Like we need to do this. Honestly, yeah, we need to kill the tie, get past Crystal Palace. Get past Porto and then we just move on to the next stages, man. And then obviously it gives us momentum and hopefully
from there.
We can do something crazy with the season. Obviously still in the FA Cup. Still in the FA Cup as well. So anything can happen, man. We're in the running to win things, in the running to finish the season really, really well after looking disastrous. So yeah, man. Hopefully next week I'll see you boys on there. We're celebrating, smiling that we're through to the semi-finals. Got 3 points against Palace, and we're looking forward to the weekend for another Prem game. Yeah. But yeah, thank you, boys. Catch you a lot later.
Yeah, love for that, bro. Easy.
Sports Social Podcast Network.